You know, you're a LA legend.
Overly flattering, but I'll take it.
I mean, I've been reading your blog for years, Passion of the Weiss, and, you know, your work with LA Weekly, and now, you know, The Land, and your hip-hop label is really cool, like, what you've done for the West Coast, and, you know, even your reach comes to the Midwest, so, you know, it's really dope. Yeah. You cover a lot of, like, Chicago artists, too.
Yeah, Chicago's, one of my favorite cities in the world.
Yeah. So, welcome, Jeff Weiss.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I just want to start with, you know, growing up in LA, you know, I know you grew up in a pretty, like, religious family, I think.
No, we're not religious. I got, well, like, you know, like, kind of like fake religious, where it's like, you will be bar mitzvahed, like, you know, and like, you're like, okay, and you will learn to read Hebrew, which you won't know what the words mean, and like, you'll have like a very, like, you will like, you know, like, all at the symbolic elements of religion, but, like, we were probably more like an agnostic family. Yeah, I think. Well, I don't know. I don't know. You'd have to ask my parents that. But, yeah, it was, I mean, like, I dropped out of Hebrew school. But I had a private tutor. He was a great man. He like, made sense. They're like, all right, you're a complete fuck-up. But we heard about this one guy. He was, like, a legendary basketball player, like, back when, like, Jews were in the NBA before, like, it was, like, when it was called the NBL, you know, so I imagine, like, it was, like, I could have been in that, like, league. I was like, yeah, I think I could have done
that. You're pretty,
like,
tall.
I would have been, like, a center, yeah, like, 6'3", you're a center in a NBA where there would be Jewish people, and, you know, not the tallest of people in general, but, yeah, no, he was, like, from West Virginia and was this basketball legend and somehow became a rabbi somewhere along the way and was like this super wise man who would tutor me. So I was like, you know.
Oh, that's cool.
So I was like Hebrew school dropout sung to beauty school dropout from Greece. That was my life. Yeah.
So when did, you know, when did like music enter your world?
It's actually really weird right now, right? Because of the whole Michael Jackson thing going on. I haven't seen the documentary yet, but, that was the only thing in my life. That was the only record, because my family was not a music family in any way, shape, or form. There was really no music in the house. It was just this one, you know, it was Michael Jackson, Thriller, was the only record in the house. It's like a very, like, almost like an Amish household, kind of, but not really, because no one was Amish. But there were, like, not really any books, or, you know, my family would give me, you know, like, I'd ask for books, and they would give me books, which was cool, but there weren't really books around, there weren't really movies around. It was like, I had to kind of, like, blindly figure out everything myself, which was kind of cool in a way, because
it's like a blank slate.
Yeah, you figure out exactly kind of like who, like none of it is like influence of anybody else. Like I don't think my parents, like I wrote a book on Tupac and Biggie with my friend Evan, and I think like the intro was like, I thank my parents because they never asked me what I was listening to. Like they could have had no idea. So I became obsessed with Michael Jackson, Thriller, and then I remember like, you know, you'd hear like random songs right on the radio. Like I remember like, I really liked Motown Philly. Like I thought that was really great. Like I liked Hammer's first album in its entirety. Haven't gone back and listened to it, but I probably would defend it. I liked Ice Ice Baby, like, you know, Young MC, Busta Move, but I think the first like real rap album I ever like was like, all right, this is like your music that you will love was probably The Chronic. And I was like, I just turned like 11 or something, I think. No, yeah, I just turned 11 and I was like, this is the best shit I've ever heard.
What did you like about it?
I think just, like, honestly, like, at first I was just drawn to the beats. Like, I thought rap producers were, like, magicians. Like, I thought, like, they are to some degree for sure. Like, but they're, like, more like alchemists than, like, magicians, right? Because they're, like, cooking up these, they're, like, stitching together these, like, different things. But I thought that, you know, it's what the NWA movie's so funny, where, like, they're showing Dre making, like, Nothing But a G thing, and you're like, that's a sample. Like, that's a Leon, you know, Haywood sample. But yeah, like, the, you know, that, that the snake like synth of like Nothing But a G thing, and then I mean I think just Snoop honestly was like so cool. Like today, like Luke Perry died, so I was like thinking about like what was cool to me when I was like 10 years old 11 years old. I feel like it was probably Snoop and Luke Perry. Like I was like that before I knew anything else. When like you have this like rudimentary perception of like what cool is, I would have said like Snoop Dogg was for sure. You know, like when the Nothing But a G Thing video starts and like Dre goes to get Snoop and Snoop's just chilling there in his house, like the weed, you know, puts on the weed hat and you're just like starts rapping like effortlessly and you're like, well, that's it. You know, and it was just the sound of LA at the time, so you couldn't escape it. You know, like Power 106.92.3, the beat, it was everywhere.
Were you able to, like, talk about it with your friends? Were they also into the same thing?
Yeah, everyone. Like, that was the other weird thing, was, like, everybody was... Because I just, like, L.A. was such a rap city, you know? I mean, like, I think maybe if I was a little older, it would have been, like, Guns N' Roses and hair metal, but, like... It had, you know, I was, like, too young for N.W.A., so, like, when Dre went solo, like, I think I remember hearing, like, an N.W.A. song on K-Day that, like, maybe my friend put on when we were, like, really young, you know, and, like, you don't even know what it is, but, like, in hindsight, I remember it, but, like, I was too young, really, for K-Day, at least the first iteration, and then, but everybody I knew, it was, like, Dre and Snoop, that was, like, everywhere, and, like, everyone I knew listened to rap, which was really funny, because I got to college, and then, like, I was just, like, it was just, like, white bros that would just be, like, you don't know Social Distortion, man? I'm like, what? And, like, but, like, in Orange County, that was the biggest band in the world. And but I just did not know. Like, I mean, I listened to, like, The Doors and, like, Jimi Hendrix. And I had, like, a year where I was super into grunge because, like, grunge was, like, really hitting. So, like, for 2 years.
In college?
No, in like, junior high. I was, like, I had, like, a year and a half. I mean, because, like, Kurt Cobain also, I'd probably say, was, like, also, like, the coolest thing. So I was pretty immediately drawn, I guess, to that, like, figures that were really popular but also subversive. I don't know if they have, I wonder now, like, who would be the modern day equivalent. I mean, they have to exist, but I feel like the desire to resist the system might not be there to the same extent, where it's like a Kurt Cobain or like a Snoop Dogg. I mean, was pretty outside, you know, he had like a murder. I mean, I guess it exists, but it's more like underground, I think, which it existed like that at the time. I mean, rap at the time, barring Dre and Snoop, was a super underground thing. Like, you had to just, like, I like, once I was, like, I think when I was, like, when Dre left, like, Aftermath, or when Dre left Death Row, I started, like, buying The Source, like, it must have been, like, 13 or 14. And that was, like, how I educated myself, was just, like, waiting for The Source to come out every month and reading it cover to cover, and just, it was so exciting.
Was that when you got the idea to write about music, or what was your, like?
No, honestly, that was a real scam. No. I never honestly thought about writing about music. I didn't even, like, I guess I knew in the abstract. Like, I had a Rolling Stone subscription, too. But writing about music was just, honestly, was, like, I went to college, and I didn't even think being a writer was, like, a potential career. Like, I played baseball, and I thought, like, oh, like, maybe I'll be a baseball player. I figured, like, maybe I'll, like, bounce around in the minor leagues for a few years. Like, by that point, I knew I wasn't good enough to, like, be in the pros. But I was like, well, maybe you can play, like, low minors or something. And, like, that'd be, like, a fun way to, you know, spend a few years before you have to, like, be serious about your life. And then that didn't really pan out. And then I really got inspired by the Beat Generation writers. And I started taking a lot of mushrooms. And, like, I quit the baseball team and this, like, huge team walkout. And then I was, you know, figuring out, like, well, what are you going to do for your life? You're going to be, like, I thought about being a professor, because, you know, I loved history, and I loved English, and I thought that'd be cool to teach, and then it just, I graduated, and I had, like, a bunch of stupid odd jobs, and I figured, like, writing was, well, I knew I was working on this novel, and I figured, okay, how can you survive until, like, I, of course, had these, like, delusional dreams. I was like, I'm going to write a novel, and,
is,
like,
that from the Beat Generation? Like, just...
With that kind of idea.
Yeah,
totally. I thought, like, oh, you can just write your version of On the Road and you will be, like, rich and famous. And, like, it...
That's, like, every young person's dream, I feel like, when you first start writing out, you know?
Totally. No, it was funny. I was watching the Jerry Garcia documentary last night, like, because my friend's like, you have to see that. I really like The Grateful Dead. I was actually in Chicago for the... they did the final 50th anniversary show a few years ago. And Garcia was... They were saying, like, he read On the Road, and that was, like, you know, and... it doesn't really, like, it's sad, because, like, they were saying how, like, he read that book and it changed his life, and I still feel like there's a lot of people that they'll read a book like that and it changes their life, and it's sad that we don't live in a culture where it's, like, it has to be the book in the canon that changed. I mean, I understand, like, I'm sure there are books that, like, 12-year-olds are reading that, like, it will change their lives, but for me, it was always old books. Like, I wish there was an author that I'd read that was, like, of this, maybe 5 or 10 years older than me where I read it, and I'm like, that gonna make me want to be a writer. But it was, you know, like, older books, I guess, and, like, yeah, I loved, like, you know, I liked, like, J.D. Salinger a lot, like, when I was a kid. I liked F. Scott Fitzgerald. I loved, just a bunch of, yeah, I got really into, like, Allen Ginsberg, and then all the other Beats, like, you know, it tried to expand. I wish I'd read Eve Babbitts when I was younger. I feel like I would have really deeply loved Eve Babbitts.
It's just, like, this dreamy quality. Like, even, I really love Joan Didion, too.
Yeah, Joan Didion's amazing.
And there's just, like, this dream, because she's from L.A.
Joan Didion. Well, she was from Sacramento, then went to New York, then lived in LA for most of her life, and then went back to New York.
Yeah, there's like that dreamy, like LA sort of 70s vibe.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, like everyone now, like, which, like, I confess, I go super late on it too, because, like, you know, only in the last couple of years. But I wish that someone had been like, actually, the Steve Babbitt's person, you know, because she is so LA. And there weren't really that many LA writers. Like, I really wanted, like, there weren't that many, like, iconic LA writers. Like, I mean, I never really was into Charles Bukowski like that. Like, some of his stuff is really good, but it just, like, the whole, like, you know, the whole, like, bro stereotype of Charles. You know what I mean? Like, I just, like, was like, ugh. Like, it was already bad enough that I was so into Jack Kerouac. I was like, I don't need to double down on this. And, yes, I never really got into that. I never really liked, actually, like, kind of actively disliked John Fonte. He was, like, a big, famous LA writer. Yeah, honestly, like, and I like Nathaniel West a lot, but then I read E. Babbitt's essay about, like, anti-Nathaniel West, where she basically was like, he's the writer that all the New York people like, because all he says is, like, LA is a stereotypical, like, place that, like, is going to end up burning, and it's, like, these, like, you know, depressing people that just wandering around in, like, a fog of, you know, a smog and, like, you know, stoned and the whole LA cliche. But then E. Babbitt was like the first one who was like, actually, it's kind of tight. And I was like, all right, yeah, you get it. You know, she's a real patron saint now. So
how did you come out of that? Like, what were your... I mean, I know you started working...
To write for music?
Like, yeah, music. Yeah. I mean, you wrote for LA Weekly, like, pretty early.
Pretty early, yeah. It was just one of those things where I was like, all right, I finished... You know, I got this really valuable but kind of job that I hated at, like, a business newspaper in the Valley, and, like, I was, like, wearing a suit every day and, like, writing a lot of bad poems and, like, reading Allen Ginsberg and just, like, hating my life, and, like, I was, like, 22 or 23, and then I was reading all these amazing blogs, and
like, what,
you know, hindsight, like, I don't know how amazing they were, but they were, like, amazing at the time to me, and, like, that's all that matters, you know. What was I reading? I mean, I was just doing a lot of imitations. Like, I always said, like, there's this one blog by this writer, Alex Blagg, that I really liked called Blagg Blog. And I mean, Aquarium Drunkard just was and still is great. I was really, my friend Ian wrote a blog called Sexy Results that I thought was amazing. We probably both. I mean, I think it's off the internet, but...
this is, like, probably early 2000s, right? Before blogging.
This is 2005. I honestly did not, like, there's this whole pre-internet thing where a bunch of people, like, I feel like I came into the internet now in hindsight because I'm older, like, early, but at the time it felt like I was kind of late because there were all these, like, message boards, and there was some website called Hip Hop Infinity, and I guess they, like, only championed white rappers, and everyone, it was really weird. Like, I was like, I don't know what anyone's talking about.
That sounds problematic.
Yeah, it was like very problematic. I was like, I don't even know what anyone is talking about. There were, like, all these internet wars that I felt like I was, like, but I just didn't know. All I knew was, I just was stoked because I was like, okay, I'm out of college now. I don't know anyone else who likes Ghostface. Like, I'm not, you know, like, all my friends, I was obsessed with Wu-Tang and, like,
on the West Coast.
Yeah. I mean, I always loved East Coast stuff. I always loved, I liked Do or Die, Twista. Like, I liked Crucial Conflict. I mean, I liked everything. The Southern rap stuff didn't get to us necessarily. Like, and the Bay stuff also, like, didn't get to us the same way. Like,
that's interesting. How you were checking for Chicago and not the Bay.
Well, because there were more crossover artists from Chicago, I think.
That makes sense.
Like, Common, I didn't know that much about, but, like, by the time I was in college, like, Common was everywhere. But, like, the Bay was so insular. Like, you know, you would never hear a Mac Dre song on the radio. Too Short. You know, everyone knew Too Short. But even E-40, like, really until, like, the Tell Me When to Go era. Like, I knew E-40. I'd listened to some E-40, but... It just, like, it didn't, like, make its way down. Like, you'd never... It really was just too... Hey, Loonies was, like, randomly huge.
I feel like a lot of the sound in the Bay, too, is very insular, you know? Like, it's very from the Bay.
Totally. It's still... And it still is. Like Mike Sherm or, like, Little Pete or, like, All Black or, like, these artists now are really huge in the Bay, but you don't really hear them, like, outside of the Bay. It's still... I think that's why the Bay is really cool like that. Like, that's kind of actually my favorite part about rap music right now, is that it's so regional again. It hasn't been this regional since the 90s. And to be, like, you know, to be, like, a mainstream rapper, you almost have to, like, become a meme or, like, have some crazy viral hit or be, like, this, like, middle brow, like, pop kind of creation. Like, I mean, like, I love Blueface, but Blueface blew up because he basically became, like, a walking cartoon, you know? And that's cool. He's super animated. He has totally a star quality, but... like, my favorite rappers from LA of this generation are Draco and Greedo, who were big, but it wasn't until Greedo started, like, doing viral things online to be like, I hate Tupac, that, and which is the problem. But going back, I guess, I quit my job in, like, I think it was, like, 06, and I just was like, all right, I have, like, 6 months. Like, I ended up, like, long story, I ended up, like, winning a lawsuit, which, like, I have a non-disclosure agreement to talk about, but it was nothing bad. It was, like, it was with my university. It was, like, over. I think technically I'm not allowed to ever talk about it again, but it was just, like, about my baseball team. Like, needless to say, like, I wasn't allowed to play baseball, and it was a whole, like, fiasco, which, you know, I'll probably write about at some point, and hopefully won't get sued. So I ended up, like, getting a little bit of money and just was like, okay, I have about, it was not, like, a lot, you know what I mean? I was like, okay, you have 6 months, you have to go finish your book, because, like, I couldn't write my book. I'm still, like, now, I'm unfortunately not one of those writers that can, like, I know, like, I have my friend Paul Thompson, is, like, he's incredible, he's, like, one of these people who's, like, I woke up at 7 o'clock in the morning and I wrote 2,000 words and then I took a nap and then I wrote 2,000 words, but I'm not like that. Like, I need, like, intense, super focus, and so I quit my job, started writing, finishing this novel, and ended up finishing it, sticking in a drawer. I'd already started my blog. It was really terrible.
What year is this?
This is end of 05 and, like, going into 06. And I quit my job in 06. And I was like, okay, I have this blog. I'm going to start writing. I'm like, okay, I'm going to try to write every day for the blog.
Like, really at the top of, like, the blog era.
Yeah. So it was a good time to get noticed. And I basically had a friend. I also wrote for this magazine called Stylist Magazine, which is super valuable. Because I kind of just learned, I had a really great editor, this guy Todd Burns, who works at Red Bull now, and he's just, like, this genius prodigy editor, and I met all these amazing other writers, and that's kind of where I really got a broad musical education, was from this magazine, because we had this message board, and it'd be one of those things where I'm like, I don't know anything about jazz, because I knew nothing about jazz, and then I remember, like, these brilliant, like, kind of eccentric people, like, that you, I, like, now I've met most of them, but, you know, they were just, like, avatars on a message board,
yeah.
And now, and they'd be like, oh, well, here's all of Miles Davis. Here's all of John Coltrane. Have you heard Alice Coltrane? You know, have you heard Dorothy Ashby? All these crazy things. And, you know, I'm like, oh, well, I got, like, really sick. And I'm like, I can't listen to anything but the blues. And they're like, oh, well, have you heard, like, Skip James? And they just put me up on all this really cool stuff. And so I got my education kind of broadened. And I kind of taught myself. I was, like, really just smoking an insane amount of weed and, like, really into psychedelics at the time. So I was, like, got really into classic rock, as the cliche would go. And so then I basically, this editor, Randall Roberts, who's now at the Times, hit me up out of the blue, and he was like, would you be interested in writing for LA Weekly? I just moved, actually, from, he was originally from St. Louis, actually, and he had just moved to LA to take over as LA Weekly music editor, and it felt like a dream coming true, you know, because he knew about me because he'd done a piece for Stylist, and he'd asked my editor, do you have any writers in LA? And, I mean, it was kind of on from there. You know, I was at the LA Times. I'd done, like, two pieces for the LA Times before that, thanks to a really great editor named Kevin Bronson, who kind of, you know, he knew I played baseball in college, so he was like, will you play in my adult baseball league? And I was like, he's like, well, I'll give you a chance. You know, like, I was like, he's like, you know, so it was, like, basically, like, he gave me a chance at the Times. I played in his adult baseball league, and it all worked out.
So, were you reading LA Weekly when you were younger? And so that kind of was, like,
I think starting when I was in college, I think I picked it up. Yeah, starting when I was, like, maybe high school. Like, I would always pick up everything. I mean, I was really obsessed with LA Times. Like, I was super obsessed with LA Times. And me and my dad used to fight over it when I was a kid. I was always really I wouldn't say I was into journalism. I was just really into writing and, like, learning. And I loved, before the internet, I mean, it was such a, you know, like, knowledge was such a premium, I suppose. I mean, now it's weird, right? Because we have all the knowledge in the world at our fingertips, but we somehow, by virtue of, that's why, like, I'm super into going to used bookstores, because you'll find books that you didn't know existed. And the internet, while it has, if you can figure out what you want, it's amazing because you can get that book. It's almost like, you don't know almost how to discover things. Or it's like, it's Spotify. It's, you know, sometimes I'll think about, like, I'll have an iPod classic and I'll listen to that because it'll just have a set number of things and I'll forget that something existed. But it'll come up on my shuffle and I'm like, oh, you loved that. Like, I'll re-listen to it, but I might not have ever remembered it existed if I was just looking through my Spotify, because it would just be like, you liked this, now you might like this. And, you know, it's just giving me a bunch of Blueface songs, which is,
I mean, so your blog, Passion of the Weiss, has really grown since, you know, what was, like, the trajectory for that? Did you have was it just you wanting to post songs, or?
Yeah, I mean, at first it was, like, just me being annoying, angry, like, idiot, you know, in his, like, early to mid-20s, and then eventually I had a bunch of bad opinions about rap that I felt like I really wanted to share with the world. It was a really bad time for rap, and I really didn't like... I don't know. At the time, like, in hindsight, it seems really stupid. Like, I can't believe I was getting mad at people over their taste in hip-hop. Like, it's just, like, one of those things where you're like, ugh.
Like, on forums?
No, not on forums. Just, like, on my blog. You know what I mean? Like, be like, ugh. You know, and like, in hindsight, some of my opinions were probably wrong. And then it was a weird time because, you know, I guess it still is to a certain point. There's such a hero worship of artists, and then maybe there always has been. But I just remember, you know, criticism, it's weird. Like, I don't know, like, it was just a weird era. Like, everyone was just like, only if you weren't rapping about coke, then, like, you were automatically bad. You know, or critics would, like, shit on you, and I was like, that's dumb. Like, I always liked all kinds of rap. I always liked, like, my favorite rap was probably, like, gangster and street rap, but when I was in college, I liked, like, the backpack stuff, and I never understood. I don't know, LA was different, I suppose. Like, there were never really those, I mean, I assume there were, like, there was more of, like, the Fat Beats crowd on, like, Vermont that, you know, I maybe, like, went to once or twice, and that was really cool, and then it moved to Melrose, but, like, the wars, you know, where they're like, you can't like Jay-Z, he's mainstream, or, like, you have to like the Roots, like, that to me was like really alien. Like I never understood that, and I still don't. And I think actually, if there's anything good now about rap criticism, is that those sort of wars are dead. And the problem with like rap criticism is it doesn't really exist, and it's like there's not much journalism. And I think a lot of people, like a lot of really intelligent people, are trying, but I don't really think
you're talking about right now.
Yeah, I don't think there's really the resources. I think the alternative weeklies were really valuable in covering.
They're mostly like dead.
They're all dead. Yeah, I mean, like, and if you ask, like, the wild thing is, what was the best story written about like XXXTentacion or whatever? It was the intern at the Miami.
Yeah, right. That one was wild.
It was great because she knocked on his door, and because she was a local reporter, and because she probably had editors that were like, you should do that, and they were, you know, it was like they were there. And without alternative weeklies, I mean, like, that is not going to happen. And national publications, I mean, you're from Chicago, so, in, you know, from the Midwest in general.
Reader.
Yeah. The Reader's great. And, like, I love Lior, and, like, I'm really happy that he and, like, they still have a music section, but I don't know how long any of these alt-weeklies can hold on. I don't know if the form is an alt-weekly. I mean, if I had a lot of money for the land, I would love it to go monthly. That would be, like, my dream. I think, like, you can do a monthly, it could be really great, and that's, you know, like, you can get ads from the venues, because I still think people don't want to. I think people are like changing. I don't think people want to go online as much. I think everyone's going nuts. Like, I mean, if you're like on Twitter, like, everyone's like, this place sucks. Like, I can't tweet anything because everyone's gonna get, you know, it's not. And I don't really even have like, I mean, I would hope I don't have super problematic opinions or whatever, but it's just, if you tweet anything, it's like,
you're heavily policed.
Yeah. It's, well, and it's like, I don't want to be like the white dude complaining about that shit because that's super annoying and like lame, but it's just one of those things where it's like, you know, like if you're tweeting about the Michael Jackson thing or whatever, and like, I personally don't really want to tweet about that, but I, you know, I did watch people tweet about it and then just get attacked by an army of bots who knows, like, hired by, you know, and it's like, that sucks. Like, who are these weird bots? Why are these like weird stan armies defending a guy who may or may not be a pedophile, but like probably has some kind of, you know what I mean? It doesn't look good for Michael Jackson. Like, that's pretty damning. Like, all that, you know, I'm not one to, I mean, maybe I am one to pass judgment, but it's pretty awful. I didn't watch it, you know what I mean? But like,
yeah.
It's like one of those things. It's like the R. Kelly thing. It's like that. I mean, he's
kind of crazy though. Like, all of these things are coming out, and all the stands are just really
Like, and it's look, like, and it's hard, right? Because the internet's like such a fucked up place. Because like, on one hand, you're like, it's great, R. Kelly will be brought to justice for doing a bunch of horrible things to people. But then you also have like this thing where you're like, but that's never great, because people were, you know what I mean? It's just sad. The whole thing is very sad. The Michael Jackson thing is very sad. These are very, like, fucked up, broken people. And yes, justice deserves, but, like, on the internet, it's, like, very much like this, everything is the classic or trash binary. So it's either, like, R. Kelly, you know, like, or Michael Jackson, like, you have these weird stan armies. And then, like, I don't know, like, I guess the point is, like, there's this, tweeting, it just always flattens nuance. You don't really have any conversation. I mean, not to say I'm articulating myself so well right now, but there's just no, it's just like, just, I feel like everything in life is like, that's like the modern era, just feels sad. And like, I guess the Twitter is probably also a good place for sad, you know?
Right. But I feel like it's probably like the nutshell of, you know, all the bullshit that's happening.
Yeah, so it's just, and you get, like, in this, like, negativity loop, and it's like, I don't even want to look at that as, you know what I mean? It's like, I don't, so I've just tried to be like, okay, well, like, it's an anniversary, like, I love, like, I'm just, like, try to make it positive and not be, like, corny positive, like, inspirational sayings positive, but, like, I like this album, you know, because, like, I watched, like, I don't know, I wrote a negative review of Post Malone, and I don't regret that. I mean, I'm, like, I stand by everything.
Did they come for you?
Oh, they came. Oh, yeah. Like, you know what I mean? It's, like, my, like, I have, like, a post about, like, my dead cat that, like, was the most important thing in my life to me, and it's, like, you have Post Malone stands in my Instagram comment section being, like, good, you deserved your cat to die. You know what I mean? You're, like, ugh, like,
that's wild.
What hellfire world are we living in? So I'm just, like, I'm gonna shut the fuck up as much as I can and try to be decent and try not to be, like, self-righteous and, like, but I'm sure I fail. Like, I just try to, like, also, like, no one really needs my opinions on everything. That's also the other thing where I'm like, all right, like, just sit this one out, chief. Like, I'm trying to, like, listen to my advice and just be like, I think you just, like, unless you're
asked. You don't have to, like, share your opinion on everything.
Totally. That's the thing about Twitter, though, is, like, it becomes this thing where, like, you think you're supposed to because you're like, oh, you know, but as I get older, I'm just like, you know what? No one cares about your opinion, so.
It's funny because, like, all, like, social media and shit, people just come for you in person, you know? And there's just so much more. Come for me in person, because that shows you got, like, more.
And, like, let's just talk about it. Like, yeah. Hopefully I'm not a bad person. You're probably not a bad person. Like, you just heard.
But you just sound evil on the internet, you know?
Yeah, like, there's just, like, sometimes I'm, like, you know.
Twitter fingers.
Yeah, like, and I've made bad jokes or something, and, you know, like, not, hopefully not, like, terrible ones, but, like, they're just not funny, you know what I mean? And, like, no one, you're just, like, you know, it's just, unless you're Jesus, that guy's figured it out, but, like, I'm always amazed that when people, like, are, like, really good at Twitter and just, like, are constantly doing that all day long, I feel bad. Like, I feel like it's, like, we will eventually get to the point where we realize this is a terrible thing. It feels like stepping into, like, toxicity every day when I'm on Twitter, and I don't think it's anybody's fault necessarily. It's just no one. I mean, I guess that's the nature of writing, right? Like, most writing is almost rooted in, like, kind of a critique of some sort, you know? Like, novels are mostly critique of society, you know? And, like, Twitter just offers, like, a, you know, an ability to, like, you know, it's like I'm doing some, like, thing that's, like, sponsored by Uber at, like, South by Southwest with, like, Roy Choi, right? And I'm stoked about it, you know, even though, like, you know, and, you know, he's, like, going to cook tacos. We're going to talk about West Coast rap. I'm like, great. And it's like, they tweeted it out, and, like, there's, like, five people in my mentions being like, where's my food? You know what I mean? I'm like, oh, stop. Like, I don't want this. Like,
everyone feels really entitled on the internet.
Yeah, totally. And it's, like, hard because, like, I don't like make, you know, it's like the older I get, the more I'm like, well, you're probably self-righteous and a hypocrite. You know, so I try to, like, kind of, you know, see both sides without being a both sides type person, you know? Like, I mean, I it's weird, right? Because I think the internet just doesn't have room for shades of gray, you know? It just doesn't, like, by nature of it, and that's kind of a troubling thing, where it's, like, there are a lot of things where I would like to, like, write a complicated take on something, but almost, like, you will get eviscerated on the internet because someone's going to misinterpret, like, what you're trying to say, and then you have to wait, you know? I don't know. It is really, it's made discourse, like, really sad, and I think you see it in the sense of, like, the presidential election or people's Facebook and people, like, not speaking to, I mean, you know, it's like, I don't know, like, the whole thing, or, I mean, obviously, it's, I don't know if it's necessarily, it's probably capitalism, like, not to get, like, extreme galaxy brain, but, like, if you look at, like, Fox News or CNN, like, it's just, you know, I'll never forgive Fox News for what they've done to my grandma, you know, for just all these things where it doesn't reward you. Like, the nuanced, thoughtful take doesn't get rewarded. Like, no one's gonna share the album take where you're like, because most things are just okay, right? Like, most albums, they're like, yeah, that's, like, fine. But, like, no one's gonna write a, this is fine take. I mean, maybe Pitchfork will, like, maybe they'll be like, this is a 6.5, you know? But most places, like, you're not, if you're pitching, you can't pitch an editor and be like, I don't know, like, this new, I'm trying to think what's, like, mediocre that I thought was, like, I don't know, like, this is just, you know, I'm, like, my brain is, like, so fried, but no, you can't just be like, yeah, I think this album is fine. What do you think?
And I want to write about it.
I want to write about it, you know what I mean? Because I'm like, why? But, so, like, you're rewarded by being like, this is a masterpiece, or this is the worst thing ever.
Yeah, that's true.
That's just, I think, how, like, you know, what goes viral is usually really positive, and especially really negative things. And like, I think people, I don't even know if people, I think it's just instinctive at a certain point. Like, you know, we're all like, you know, rats, like looking for the pellet, where you're just like, okay, I'll get a lot of retweets or whatever. And like, I don't know, it's a horrible place to be. So my dream is to just disappear. Like I, you know, I think Riff Raff was really smart when he said, I just want to blow up and act like I don't know nobody. And like, I mean, I'm joking, but it's like,
no, you're not.
No, I just want to blow up. And like, I don't even know what that would mean for what I do. But I would like to like be able to just do good work and kind of be
out of the way. Not need the internet.
Yeah, and just be out of the way and just like, okay, like I wrote a book, you know, that'd be like, that would always be my dream.
So what happened to the novel you put away?
I think at some point, my grandma's really obsessed with it still, and she's like almost 90. And it's actually really cool because like I took her to a play like last week. My friend, I don't know, it's like one of those things, like I'm getting older and sentimental, and like, you know, I don't know how long my grandma will have, you know, because she is old. And one of my friends from childhood wrote a play, and it's really good, and it was playing at the Los Angeles Theater Center, and she remembers him from when she was a kid, and I took her to the play, and she was like, it was great, and she was like really amped on this play. It was a really cool play, you know, the Canyon, playing at the Los Angeles Theater Center. I mean, it was a Chicago audience, but it's good. And you know, I was coming home, and she was like talking to me. She's like, I don't understand why you can't get your book published. And she was like reciting the plot from like 15 years ago when I wrote it, 12 years ago. My grandma's, you know, memory isn't what it was, so that was really cool. So I think at some point I would love to try to do it. I was working on a book before all the LA Weekly stuff went down that I'm trying to get back to.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. I mean, kind of like a, I guess, brief synopsis.
Yeah.
Basically got taken over by a bunch of conservatives.
Yeah, I mean, the publisher was the former vice president of an organization called the Claremont Institute, which is basically the premier California, like whole West Coast think tank for Republicans. New York Review of Books called them Trump's brains. He'd been really active in like, he was a part of a conservative PAC, like that they had in Orange County. A bunch of the members of this PAC with him bought the LA Weekly. You know, it seemed like they were going to turn it into a right-wing rag. They just turned it into nothing. They just basically ran into the ground completely. I don't know if they're... I can't imagine that they bought it to make it more liberal. I'd like to think that by buying it and basically ruining it, you were just taking it out. They bought it at a song. I mean, it really wasn't that much money. They basically fired everyone the moment they bought it. No exit interviews. They didn't talk to anyone on the staff. They just fired everyone. There was a blank website basically for like a week. Nobody even knew who owned the paper. Myself and a couple other people started a boycott. It was really successful, which, I mean, if anything...
Boycott as in like telling advertisers to pull...
It wasn't really telling advertisers not to pull their ads, but I mean, that we wanted advertisers to pull their ads, you know. It was more... They would put on events. That was part of their scam. You know, they basically just hoped that no one would know that it was like they were running like a shell corporation, LA Weekly. And print media is not obviously what it was, but you can still make some money. And if you're running a skeleton publication with like one or two writers on staff, and you're selling these ads to companies that are, you know, restaurants or businesses that might not know that the LA Weekly is not what the LA Weekly was, because a lot of people aren't on Twitter. Good for them. And, So they were doing all these events, like food events, and we basically tried to convince these restaurants, and it wasn't even convinced, it was like, this is what this is, and they were trying to get all these restaurants to give them free food, and like, you know, these big LA Weekly food events, you know, you'd go there, I don't know if the Reader does it, but it's like, you'd go there, and you'd pay like $50, and you'd get to sample all these like amazing
things. Right, it's called Taste Chicago.
Taste of LA type thing. And so we were able to shut down two of their events, and that really was, you know, we put a stop to their ability to do that sort of thing. And from there, the boycott kind of evolved into what became The Land, because we were just at these meetings, and I kept on calling these meetings, and, you know, we went from like 50 people to like 20 people, and then I just had the feeling, I was like, how many times are you really going to call these meetings? You can't really be negative your whole life. It's like my whole life is trying to turn negativity into positivity, because I'm inherently a pretty negative person. And that's kind of the positivity that I like, is when it's like comes through darkness, because I think that's like a more realistic form of positivity, because ultimately like everyone's going to die.
To be a realist.
It's kind of bleak. Yeah, it's like not a good thing. It doesn't like end well for anybody. Like you end up dying and like everyone you loved goes on. Like it's really sad. So I'm like, how can I make... You know, I talk about this a lot, where it's like, that's why I don't like really like Bernstein Ellis as a writer, because that's like not really a complicated take to be like, yeah, the world sucks, people are shallow and stupid, and like, you know, you might as well just be a nihilist. And you're like, Well, yeah, like, I guess, but you might as well try to find some meaning in the nothingness. Like, it's, otherwise it's very unsatisfying. And in terms of this, it was like, okay, well, what's really letting them win? Letting them win first would have been letting them continue with the publication. We'd already, I mean, it still technically is there, but I mean, it's dead, you know. But
they don't post anything.
It's like, I've had like one, I haven't checked in like the last few days, but I mean, they had like one tweet for the last half of February. You know, they do have stuff, but it's just so bad. Like, their traffic is nosedive. The publication's like a pamphlet. It's effectively dead.
Do you think that, you know how Trump is like really out to get liberal media? Do you think it was kind of like a way to cut into liberal media?
I have to. I like, why else would a bunch of like, I mean, like, I've been like, people ask me that, right? And I was like, okay, I'm a very progressive person, I would like to think, you know, like, depending on how you define it, but I'm very liberal, you know, in general. I've never been in any kind of, like, liberal organization, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not, like, in a pack for the Democrats or whatever, because, like, I just, you know, I vote, and I, like, I don't even give money to candidates, right? But, like, these men, their whole lives was, like, how can we get Republican candidates elected? Like, they had a pack. You can look it up. It's Gen Next. It's, like, publicly, it's, like, public record, because donations are all public. And you can see, like, they donated, I think it was, like, 99% Republican candidates over the course of 12 years. You know, you're the vice president of, like, this Republican think tank. It's, like, I'm not in what think tank. I wouldn't even know what it's, I mean, like, yeah, you would think you'd have to move to Washington, D.C. to be in a Democratic think tank. So I wouldn't even have the first idea, you know? I have a couple friends that are activists, but most people I've known my whole life who are pretty progressive people aren't even involved in it. These men, their whole life was that. You know, one of the guy, the publisher, Brian Kaye, he was running the op-ed pages for the Orange County Register, which is basically the biggest libertarian paper for the last 30 years in California. So to separate the politics from it, I think it was inextricable, because that was their whole life, you know? And I think they just kind of got caught. And I don't think they realized that, which is amazing, because it's like, maybe the journalists might be able to report and research the story, but I don't think they understood that. And, you know, I don't know. I grew up on Tupac, too. So, like, you know, hit 'em up was a popular drink, and it still is. So I just...
So now you have the land, and, you know, you put out your first issue. It was really dope.
Yeah.
Congrats on that.
Thank you. Yeah, no. So basically, we're at these meetings, and kind of a collective of six ended up forming from it. And we have a bunch of... Several people from the former, who were staff at Daily Weekly, they were fired, contributed in the new magazine. We had the kind of, the support from almost everybody that, you know, used to write for the old LA Weekly. I mean, everyone was pretty behind us, and like, they wanted to see something kind of rise from the ashes. I have a really talented team who I should shout out, because, you know, it's important to kind of give credit. Jen Swan is my co-editor-in-chief. Sarah Bennett's the managing editor. Liz Ohanesian's our senior writer. Mark Ortega was the senior editor. She's a senior editor, Mark Ortega's senior writer, and we have a really brilliant graphic designer named Evan Solano, creative director.
I went to college with Jen.
Oh, really?
In Chicago.
Oh, Arts Institute. Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, so yeah, she's awesome, and she I mean, like,
the She's from LA too.
She's from she's from like a Santa Clarita area, like Northeast LA or north just north, but it was really just a kind of quixotic, like, just crazy idea. We're at these meetings, we're like, okay, well, let's do an issue called the People's Issue, because the LA Weekly always did a People issue. So we're like, let's do a People's issue, you know, obviously, like, kind of corny for the people, but...
And then it is, right? That's, like, the intention, though.
Yeah, that's
though.
The idea. It's by locals, for locals. It's, I you know, it's funny, right? Like, I've been trying to spend... You know, I grew up on, like, the Gen X model, right? Like, I was saying, the Kurt Cobain, like, the Snoop. And, like, all that stuff is, like, super... It's super cool, right? Like, in the sense where it's, like... And I don't mean cool, like, in the sense of, like... cool like popular, but I mean, like, cool in the sense it's like has like a sort of remove, you know. It's sort of more cynical, more skeptical. I mean, and of course I'm still very skeptical, but it kind of is like, it was a natural response to, I think, the boomers and how they were like kind of like corny and like, we can change the world. And like, I think Gen X saw that maybe they look how bad the boomers fucked up. They fucked up everything. And Gen X is like, well, fuck this. Like, we're gonna do our, you know, and then now, like, we are kind of, I think, the air quote millennials are kind of left with, okay, well, what are we going to do? Because, like, subsequently, everyone's fucked up. Like, all these institutions have been destroyed. Every Out Weekly is destroyed. Every magazine is hemorrhaging staff. Every newspaper is hemorrhaging staff. You know, the president is literally a traitorous, racist, evil fuck.
It's a hard time now.
It's a hard time. Yeah. Right? And, like, so how are we going to, like, rebuild without just giving up. Because, I mean, I think, like, giving up, I don't blame anybody for giving up. Like, I totally empathize with that. But it just, like, for me, I couldn't, because I'm just, maybe I'm a little crazy in that way. But I think, like, this is the really the point of it is I think that people can do it. It might be really difficult. I mean, this has been, like, the biggest sacrifice, craziness. All of the people on the staff and collective sacrificed. You know, I had to sell ads myself. But it was, like, something, it was all kind of worth it to, you know, to be, like, you know, me and, like, my friend Paul went to drop off papers at, like, Nipsey Hussle's spot. And, like, there was a guy at the, like a soul food restaurant right next to it. And he was just like, can I get one of those? And I was like, oh, cool. And I was like, I hope you like it. And he's like, oh, I know I will. Or, you know, I went to, like, you know, and that, like, there's something like that. Or, like, I went to this place called the New Beverly Cinema, which is, like, now owned by Tarantino. But, like, I grew up going to it before. It was, like, you know, it was just, like, just owned by this one dude who, like, and his son, who I knew the son. And I'd always grown up going there, seeing old movies and stuff. And it was just my favorite place to go. And I delivered it there. And they were like, oh, we've been waiting for this. So that was really meaningful. And just seeing people get excited about a magazine in 2019 is such a surreal feeling. And you know, not much... I hate to say the word inspiring, because it's just, like, it's very much like, yeah, but it was inspiring, you know?
I really hope this is, like, a return to print.
Yeah.
You know, time for that.
I think there is a demand for print. I think people care about print. I think it just has to be good. I mean, like, we got lucky. Like, I mean, I have, like, a really good team in LA. Like, I think there's a real hunger for it. LA, but I would love, like, you know, to see a bunch of people start up their own magazine. It can just be, like, yearly. I mean, it can just be a zine. Like, I
think I'm doing that with Jessica, I hope.
That's cool. That's awesome. Yeah. I mean, Hopper, yeah. Oh, with Jessica Hopper? Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. Yeah, she's amazing. Yeah.
I love her.
Yeah, she's a legend. Yeah, yeah. No, it's funny, last year when I was at Pitchfork, and she was like, I just read Our Band Could Be Your Life. And she was kind of like, she obviously comes from more of, like, the punk rock tradition. And I didn't even know, I mean, I was the hip hop kid, so I didn't even know about that whole DIY, like, you know, Ian MacKaye, like Fugazi, like that tradition. You know, and that was really inspiring to me, knowing that people had done that in a completely different way.
It has, like, the same ethos, you know? Totally. Yeah.
And Jen is, like, punk, and Evan, the creative director, is punk. So, like, you know, Henry Rollins contributed to the magazine. So that was kind of cool to know that there. And I think we forget that, you know what I mean? Like, we just, it's so easy to get cynical, especially, like, going back to the Twitter thing. But it's like, of course, like, again, like, I'm not blaming anybody. Like, looking on the internet every day is a fucking shit show. Like, and, like, there's a lot of horrible things. It's like, you know, going back to the R. Kelly and Michael Jackson thing, that's horrible, right? Like, to see two people that are, like, I mean, you've lived in Chicago. Like, I mean, R. Kelly was everything to people in Chicago for a long time. Like, Michael Jackson was literally all the music I knew till I was age 8. And having to come to grips with the fact that, yeah, they probably both were monsters. And, R. Kelly, like, it's almost 100%. I mean, it is, like, you know, you have to say...
It's undeniable.
Yeah. Allegedly, but, like, yeah, we all know, like, R. Kelly's a monster.
When you write the news, you have to say allegedly.
Yeah, totally. Like, I'm always, like, worried about, like, lawsuits. I'm like, you know, like, but yeah, like Michael Jackson, like, I mean, of course I believe those accusers, and we have to deal with that. And, like, so every day it's like a nightmare, you know, kind of. And then you see the horrible things that the president has empowered, or and the mass shootings, and it's so easy to get cynical, and it's certainly reasonable to be skeptical. But I do think that there is a great opportunity now, because there is the collapse of these institutions. And I think there are things in life that are timeless. I think print is one of them. I think, like...
Yes, I agree. Yeah.
I think, like, good journalism is time... Like, telling stories, you know, the community. Like, people want to know what's going on in their backyard. People want to know about their neighbors and, like, you know, the culture that, like, we live in. And, like, I don't know. I think...
It's, like, the physicality of it, even, like, so many things are on the internet, digital, intangible, you know? You can't hold it in your hand.
Yeah.
You can't connect to it physically.
Totally. I know. And it's like people still buy... Like, people are buying more vinyl than ever. It's wild, because it's like so many people have gone to me and they're like, oh, do you have something about, like, where I can go see shows in there? And you're, like, thinking to yourself, like, well, there's, like, a million apps. You know, there's a million websites that have, like...
There's, like, almost too many, you know?
There are too many. Yeah. Yeah. And, like, you know, like, I think we're hopefully getting to the point where it's, like, just information overload. Fuck, like, I don't know. Like, I don't necessarily want to read a magazine, like, every day. But, like, I'll pick it up and, like, that's cool. I can just flip through it and, like, maybe write the date on my phone. You know, or, like, I can buy the ticket on my phone. But I don't necessarily need to, like, sift through 8 websites trying to find out what... is happening in my city. So, I mean, that's not the point of it. The point of it is really to kind of tell the stories that, like, I mean, LA is a crazy, like, mosaic, you know? It's, like, 4 million people in so many different areas, and, like, so many different ethnicities, and just, like, types of people. And We're trying to make it, like, not Hollywood, though. Like, we're trying to make it, like, everything's right. Not Hollywood. Like, I mean, I'm sure there'll be some Hollywood stuff. But, like, all the Hollywood stuff, like, already gets covered. We're trying to make it, like, you know, we really, like, our goal was to get, like, a story about, like, every type of, you know, thing in LA could get covered in the first issue. And we obviously, you couldn't do it, but like we tried to get like every, you know, like intersectional thing in some way. Like that was kind of like the notion of intersectionality was, I think, like really paramount in our heads, because it would be like, what the story, like where gentrification could cut with race, could cut with sexuality, you know what I mean? Like, all these different things. And like, we're trying to kind of do those rather than like, oh, this is just a sick musician, or, oh, this is, you know, just a cool restaurant, you know, like in terms of, like our restaurant stories, you know, the one that sticks out to me was, this writer, Javier Cabral, who's from East LA, and who actually, like, I met him when he took me to a punk rock show. It was like all Mexican punk rock show in South Central. And, you know, and so it was actually a really wild scene, because there were a bunch of like older, black men, like, that were watching the show. They're probably in like their 40s, and, you know, I don't want to like stereotype, but it looked like they'd had like kind of, you know, they were, you know, wearing colors and, like, you know, gang colors. And there's, like, these young Mexican kids who, like, obviously, like, South Central is now, I think, more than half Mexican, whereas it was, I think, like, 70-80% black for a long time. And there's kind of, but it was really cool. They were just, like, staring at this punk rock show, you know, these, like, Mexican kids, like headbanging and, like, moshing and, you know, just, it was kind of a sort of amusement. But Javier took me to this, and that was the first time I'd even seen that. You know, there's so much in LA that you just don't know. And, like, that's been one of the cool things about the magazine is I don't really... Yeah, I'm learning. I love the aspect of learning about the city from these other, like, really talented writers or in these different parts. But basically, Javier wrote a story about a narco corrido singer who was born, actually, I think, in Highland Park. He grew up here, and his mom was from Sinaloa, and his mom's boyfriend was actually from El Chapo's hometown. And so they run this, like, amazing Mariscos truck in Highland Park, which is... there's a ton of gentrification there. And it's like kind of one of these like last bastions of like, you know, the real Highland Park that was. And, you know, the son is singing these songs that kind of harken back to his like ancestral homeland, you know, and he's like shouting at he shouted out like El Chapo at our release show. And he's singing like these like kind of drug ballads. And like, of course, you know, then you tweet
drug ballads. Is yeah. Interesting.
Yeah. And then he shouted out on, you know, even you tweet on the internet and like, of course someone's like, El Chapo murdered. You're like, oh, just stop it. Like, yeah, I know. Like no one's saying El Chapo is a great guy. It's just a tradition. It's like, like, you know what I mean? I don't know, but it's interesting. I mean, because then you can point out like the racial element of it. So we're like, white people would like sing songs about Billy the Kid. I don't think if people were yelling at Bob Dylan for being like, Billy the Kid was a murderer, killed 15 people. And it's like, you know, it's when the racial element like happens. And I think like the racists on the internet really come out. But
damn, true.
Fucking internet. You know what I mean? Like, no one was like, oh, how dare Bob Dylan write about Billy the Kid? Or, like, no one was like, Bonnie and Clyde, they were murderers, you know? And you're like, yeah, they were horrible people. Like, Bonnie and Clyde were sociopaths. They were murdering people. Like, they're not good people, you know? Like, you know, people are singing ballads about Jesse James, like, who's, like, not a good guy, but, you know?
Yeah.
America's fucking crazy.
Okay, so what are 5 albums you're listening to right now?
5 albums I'm listening to right now.
It can be old, can be new, it doesn't really matter.
It's a really good question. I'm like, my brain is like so fried. Let me
look. You can open your phone.
I'll look on my phone because I listen to, honestly, I listen to a lot of Draco. He's like one of my favorite rappers of last
year. Is he from LA?
He's from LA. I listen to like Cold Devil like all the time, like obsessively. Like it's my favorite record of the last couple years. So I'm always listening to that because and it's a crazy story too, because he it's really fucked up. He's in jail, I think wrongfully accused. He's in something, I think it's called K-19, so if I'm wrong, then I'm wrong, but basically, he is on trial for murder. It's a very complicated story. I've written about, I actually had an article in The Last Playboy. They're trying to use his lyrics against him, some of them which are from Cold Devil. It's an insane, like, he shouldn't be arrested. Like, they're basically accusing him of trying to kill another rapper, but the rapper wasn't at this party, so then they're claiming he gave the gun to one of his friends in the car, who then killed somebody else, and they're saying that Draco ordered the hit, but he wouldn't have even known that the other person was there. But also, there's a testimony of somebody else saying that Draco didn't give the gun to the shooter, and the DA is literally arguing, like, there's a character in the place named, or in the case named Shitty, like, Too Shitty is his name, and the DA is trying to argue that they said homie on this tape. It's like nuts. And I don't know if you've ever covered.
It seems like really detailed.
Everything is really nuts. Like everything, like I covered the Boosie case in Baton Rouge, and like you just see how fucked up the criminal justice system is. And like he is now, because I think like months ago he had a tweet basically saying like fuck these police officers. I guess somebody in the Instagram comments, because again the internet, was like fuck them, we're gonna get them, or something, you know, something of that sort, right? So then they're trying to claim that he incited threats against two police officers, so they're holding him in like this top, like where all the cop killers are, in like the highest security. He gets like an hour of sunlight a day, he can't make phone calls anymore, he can't get visitors. They're just like trying to break him. And I mean, you know, he's still in good spirits whenever I talk to him. You know, he can only make calls on Sunday. It's really fucked up. Like,
that's wild.
He's what am I listening to? I listened to... I did not like the Lil Pump album. I thought the Offset album was okay.
Oh, you actually listened to Lil Pump
album? I was curious. I kind of thought his last album was okay. I'm listening to... I was listening to At the Pershing, But Not Me by Ahmad Jamal, because I listen to a lot of jazz. I listened to... I have been listening a lot to Blueface's, like, Famous Crip album. I've been listening to like random things. I've been listening to the Wow freestyle from Kendrick and J. Lamar, or J. Rock and Kendrick Lamar, as I mangle.
Oh
that.
Yeah.
Have you seen the video for that?
No, I don't think so.
It's incredible. Like, yeah, it's about, they have all this old footage of Kendrick and J. Rock like driving around, and I think there's something kind of magical about it, where it's just, I love the idea where it starts out is like, can we get it, like when Top used to have the red Charger. And I just love the idea of, like, them being, like, this, like, really famous, and just thinking back to kind of when they were, like, kind of just nobodies, and just, I'm, like, super nostalgic. So, like, and the video kind of captures that really well. So I think that's great, and I just listen to it a lot. I'm really not articulating as well as I'd like to, but it's a wonderful video. I just, like, I'm a sucker for, like, the, you know, sepia tint and kind of just going around LA, and I don't know.
That's definitely a vibe. I couldn't even imagine it and haven't even seen it, you know. Yeah. So.
I listen to like a lot of the LA shit, not just because I'm like, you know, I've been listening to the new Flying Lotus record, like, which is not out yet, but like, not to be a flex, but I think it's really good. So
I didn't know there was one out.
Yeah, they sent that promo out. I'm excited about the new 2 Chainz record. I haven't listened to that yet, and feel there was. I really want to listen to the new DaBaby album, but I was in New York last week, so I didn't have a chance to listen to it.
I like that one video he did, Texas Ranger or whatever.
I love Walker.
Walker. I watched that show when I was little, so yeah. I was like, damn, that's...
Yeah. That's why I love rap, where it'll be like, they'll just, rappers like have a crazy memory. It's like, right. We're like,
it'll be like the most random pop culture reference, like, when there, like, wasn't even a pop culture reference.
Yeah, like when Lil Wayne's like Murder, She Wrote, like Angela Lansbury. You know what I mean? It's like, I love that. I listen to a lot of, like, Lil Boosie still. Like, I listen to, like, old Boosie at the gym. He's one of my favorite rappers of all time. I mean, I was listening to the Future, the Wizard record for a while, but I kind of haven't gone back to it that much, even though it's, like, good, but it's, like, kind of Future by Numbers, but it's still good. I don't know.
Yeah, I feel you. Yeah. Well, thank you for your time.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me. Yeah, I appreciate it.
Thanks.
Yo, we want to thank DJ Exist for the beat.
Langston Olsen for the art.
Big ups, Todd Manley at WGN Radio.
And Max and Dami, the Corner Store interns.
Salutes to our super producer, DJ Cash Era.
You can keep in tune with the Corner Store at cornerstore_pod on Instagram, Twitter, and SoundCloud.
Also, you can stream and download the Corner Store wherever you listen to podcasts.
And please rate and subscribe and comment on iTunes.
Please, y'all, consider giving us those 5 stars.
Thank you for listening.
We're going to see you next week.
The Corner Store is brought to you by Stolen Spirits.